Good morning. It is Tuesday. This is a morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Bo, hanging out with you on a somewhat rainy kind of day.
Yeah, I'm so mad at myself because I should have probably done some yard work yesterday that I needed to do, and I didn't. And I was like, I'll just do it tomorrow. And now that it's raining, I'm like, not good planning on my part, man. I definitely dropped the ball on that end. So you're right. It's a little bit ugly outside. I bet it wasn't, from your pictures, it wasn't ugly in Miami.
It was not. We actually had great winter weather for Miami. I think the high was like 80, 79 to 80.
That's like my perfect climate.
And I got the complimentary upgrade at the hotel.
That's always
good. Wraparound balcony, private view of the beach. Mm. The girl said, I'm going to do this, but please don't tell anybody. I said, sure.
As you tell.
Secret's safe with me.
A couple million people.
Look, no one's going to know. No one's going to know.
Don't tell Tiff a secret. It'll be, she'll just wait. I waited like 3 days and then I told the world.
Give us her name too, Tiff.
Florida, you know?
Yeah. So, you got a picture of this lady?
I got
her employee number.
You stop it.
Wraparound balcony. That's nice.
Yeah.
Room service or no?
I didn't use it. I DoorDash. There wasn't a lot of great options.
What?
There wasn't that great.
You DoorDash.
There was not good options at.
Yeah, I mean, like,
there's.
It sounds like a nice hotel that probably
had
decent stuff.
But the room, because it's so massive, when you're at a resort and it's so massive, sometimes the selection is limited because there's so many people. So it's either, you know. Anyway, that's minutia. But no, I DoorDash some stuff and opened the sliding glass windows and got to kind of sleep and wake up to the sound of waves.
And did you sleep with it open?
I did not. I wanted to.
You thought about brave.
It. I was high up. It wasn't like I was like on the ground.
No, I mean brave in terms of like you're there. Like you can sometimes get raspy. Sometimes your kind of voice goes out when the weather gets to you.
It's
you know
beach
what I mean?
Weather. It revives you.
Trust me. I grew up in Florida. It's I get what you're saying. Sometimes you wake up when that weather is, the temperature fluctuates. Sometimes it can lead to a little sore throat in the morning.
No, I didn't sleep with it like that. Just, open it up, watch the sunrise. Good times. Take me back. But I'm glad to be back on a rainy day.
Sounds like it.
With
sounds
you
like
guys.
It. Yeah.
I don't even know.
Sorry
it's
to bring
60.
You down.
It's like 60 or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
It was weird when we got back from Denver. Sunday night. It was starting to get cold in Denver as we walked on the tarmac, and then when we got back, I was like, man, it feels good out here, because it was like I don't even think it was 60, but it was right. It was like 55, 60 degrees. And as we were walking down the stairs off the plane, I was like, it feels so good.
Yeah,
even though
sounds
it,
awesome.
when we landed in Denver, I was like, and it was crisp. I was like, feels so good,
right?
Because you got a little bit of that crisp air, and I've been following the tournament is in how many hours, Mike? Not 25.
Not 25.
In like
whatever
6 days.
You said yesterday.
And it's gonna knock on wood, Dylan. Right now the forecast is like partly cloudy and 65 degrees, and I'm like,
that's a perfect golf day.
Yeah, because
partly cloudy.
Because I'm going to have my Squid Nation hoodie on.
No, you're not.
We're doing the show because it's going to be chilly.
No, you're not.
But by the time we tee off, it's going to be, depending on what your preference is, hoodie and shorts or short sleeve and pants, right? And, I mean, I'm a hoodie and shorts kind of guy. That's how I live my life. So that's perfect golf weather.
That's how I live my life. It's a hoodie and shorts kind of guy.
Yeah, hoodie and shorts and a pint of beer at a time, That's all of my life.
Stop it.
What?
You don't even drink beer.
Yeah, dude.
No, you don't.
I drink the Al Inn Lager.
Yeah.
And sure. I drink it. My beer drinking days are less than they were before because I like to do some vodka, maybe a little transfusion here or there.
Yeah, sure.
However... Yeah. When you roll up to NASCAR, Mike, when you roll up to these events, you roll up on a tailgate, beer is the way to go. It's a lot easier.
There's no doubt.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, we'll get you to the Falcons soon enough, but the Atlanta Hawks survive their game against the Sacramento Kings, 109-108. They did blow a 16-point lead, but they came back to win this thing. And it was a night in which you saw Trae Young dish it out. He had just 7 points, but but 19 assists. So he was distributing the ball quite well in this one.
Yeah, and this is a team that continues to get healthier and healthier little by little. You saw Bogey, Kobe last night. And look, man, Dyson Daniels, I mentioned this to Bo before the show. I'm a big Vic Krejci fan, but Dyson Daniels might be the jersey I'd have to select if I was getting one right now, man. He's just playing at such a high level defensively, doing all the things. He's doing so many things, Dyson Daniels is, that you have begged for the Atlanta Hawks to do for years. And Dyson Daniels has been that guy. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's the sole reason they were able to win. But, man, he's been a catalyst for change.
Well, he made
for this
the
franchise.
Game-saving play. So yeah. He stripped De'Aaron Fox's attempt at a game winner. So,
yeah.
First kudos off, don't be flim-flamming. You got to pick a guy and go with it. You can't be,
look, man.
You know, no. You can't be just flipping on guys because
that's what it sounds like.
You know what? I'm glad you did that wham thing, because that's essentially what the mafia is, a bunch of flim flammers. But here's what I tell you.
Second player in 2 years.
That's flim flamming. Okay. Here's what I will tell you. For an organization, and Dylan and Day Day is Atlanta guys, I need y'all to tell me if you think I'm right or wrong on this.
Sounded like a shot.
But, well, I mean, you just bragged about growing up at the beach and how you know about the wind, and you just took a shot at me, so I'm going to take a shot at you. Hey, the reality is that for an organization that has a tradition of losing trades, it feels like we have won this trade currently. I know it's a short time, but it doesn't feel one like we're going to lose. I mean, let's be honest. The national narrative is you lost a trade. Whether I believe that or not, that's the national narrative. You absolutely lost the DeJounte Murray trade. We all know
the first one.
Yes, when you traded for him.
Yeah, yeah.
We all know that the Dominique Wilkins trade will go down as probably the worst trade in NBA history, if not top five, when you got Danny Manning. But there's others that you can mix in there. But this is a team that doesn't do well when they trade and they make these big trades. And right now, it looks like you're on the positive end because Dyson Daniels is not what you thought you were getting. It is much, much more.
Yeah. And look, I think that it starts there, and I think, what was the number? I just looked at it a second ago. 12 consecutive games with a steal. Come on, man. Come on. Not only that, what did Trey have, 8 last night, 7 or 8
7 points?
19
assists.
19 assists, right? And I'm not saying that's the path forward. It's got to be different, you know, depending on the matchups and everything else, but when Trey's in a given mood and you actually have a defender like Dyson Daniels playing next to him, this team, man, like, they're a good squad, and I think that brings consistency to this team.
Well,
because
we
talked about the Kings, and you talked about the West Coast trip and the second of a back-to-back. It's just we don't see the Hawks, it feels like, put that kind of effort forth in some of these games like that.
And I want to add on to this, too, just real quick. Sorry, Tiff. I want to add on this,
that's
too.
That's all right.
Dyson Daniels is only 21 years old. So if he continues to play the way that he has and his projection and his uptick and potential keep the trajectory that it has now – you have your backcourt for hopefully maybe the next, you know, 8 years, maybe even a decade. Like, so when you talk about winning a trade, yes, you missed out on the DeJounte Murray trade, but trading away DeJounte Murray, I think you, as of right now, as it stands right now, it looks like you got the absolute most back, plus maybe even a little bit more for what you ended up giving up. So Dyson Daniels looking really, really good right now.
Mm.
What I was going to go back to was just Trae Young. When you were talking about him distributing the ball with the 19 assists, I thought it was great. You got your team leader recognizing, as he said it, that he said he knows his shot's going to come back, but he didn't want to force anything tonight. So he wanted to make sure that he got everybody involved. So I thought that was
beautiful.
Really key.
Yeah, I'm glad that you used that quote, because that's one I wanted to touch on too, is the fact that 5 of his points came from the free throw line. And when he's 1 from 7 to the field, It's really important for a guy like Trae Young to be able to trust his teammates and know that they're going to pick him up. You know, you get DeAndre Hunter coming off the bench in only 25 minutes, dropping 24. I don't know what DeAndre Hunter's future is with this team or the league, but if he can understand that this is what he is now, and he can come off and give you 24 points, and he's not going to give you that every night, but he can give you valuable minutes and score points. You know, the fact that Zachary Richichet is has taken his spot, but also the fact that they basically split time last night and they're on the floor at the same time, you know, the same time. But when you get 26 minutes from one and 25 from the other, and you're getting what? You get 42 points combined.
Dude.
And Reece Shea is a stat line just filler, dude. I mean, there's no stat line that goes with a zero in it for him. Yeah. And the fact that he has another two steals, a block, you know, he's a thief is what he is.
Yeah.
He's an absolute thief on the court.
I will say this too, watching this game last night, in years past, the last couple of years I would have probably felt a certain way about Kevin Huerter being on the opposing team and, you know, what comes along with that. Yeah, I wasn't worried about it last night because Reece Shea, to your point, is playing at or above expectations so far, and Dyson Daniels is doing the same thing. When you add that to Trey that's dishing it out, DeAndre Hunter playing well, and everything else that comes along with that, I know it's a one-point win, but, man, it felt for whatever reason, much more massive than that, considering everything that's happened recently.
When we come back here on the morning shift, a much-needed bye for the Atlanta Falcons, but what are their plans? Does it perhaps mean looking in the mirror? We'll hear from quarterback Kirk Cousins next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Second and six. Rush. Ball knocked out of his hand and ends up in the arms of Guyton. He gets it knocked out by Petrie and the return for the touchdown by Derek Barnett.
Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on the call of Monday Night Football on ESPN. And that was Derek Barnett with a capping off a crazy play. There with fumble after fumble, he gets the scoop and score, and that helps the Houston Texans have a dominant win over the Cowboys 34-10. It seems like the sky is falling in Arlington, literally with the metal falling from the roof of Jerry World prior to the start of the game. If you didn't see that, they had to secure another piece that was about to fall onto the field. So things are not going well there at the Star in Dallas for the Cowboys. But the Texans absolutely needed that win to kind of redirect the course of their season.
Yeah, I see what you did there. How about this note? The Cowboys have trailed by at least 20 points in each of their past six home games. That is...
if you want to play them, you want to play them at home. That's
brutal. That's absolutely brutal. That's an NFL record. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that at times this game was going to be closer. I think there was an explosive at the end of the first quarter, early second quarter, that made this a 14-7 game. And it just seemed like it was tight almost going into halftime. In the second half, Dallas just they lacked any kind of counterpunches. And the images of Dak sitting up in the box, man, watching his Surface tablet, man, just it's not good right now. And this is one of those weird deals where so many times people say that Jerry Jones overreacts midseason or whatever it may be to different things. Now, obviously, he's come out and said he's not firing Mike McCarthy and he's going to make it end of the year and all that. But, man, that team is deficient in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, they're deficient, but the reality is Mike McCarthy's went 12-5, two straight seasons? And they're extremely banged up. They've lost so many guys on defense, you know, some key players. They've lost their starting quarterback. I don't know what you think you're getting if you it's not the same situation to me as New Orleans, where it felt like a mutiny. Even at some point, I think there was some player groundswell, and I'm not sure that's the case in Dallas. And you've lost so many key players, and you've got a good coach. And, you know, I don't think it's the same thing. And I'm not sure firing Mike McCarthy does anything to help this team move forward. In fact, I think it makes it probably worse.
I don't know, man. I just feel like and you mentioned 12-5 years, and then I see what Kellen Moore's doing in Philly right now as the offense coordinator. It just feels like this offense has been stagnant. And you mentioned Dak's out, dude. They weren't good before Dak left. I mean, obviously, we saw that here firsthand a couple of weeks ago in Atlanta. So
I disagree with you. I'm going to push back. I think Kellen Moore is doing a good job, but he's also got healthy A.J. Brown now. He's got Devonta Smith.
Those guys have missed games this year.
They have missed, but they're both healthy, if I'm not mistaken, right now. They've got, is it Goddard at tight end? Phenomenal player. Saquon Barkley is kind of the thing that is setting that offense on fire right now. And Jalen Hurts seems healthy. And Jalen Hurts is getting back to being Jalen Hurts. I don't think that's the same. And I don't think at any point in time he ever had that many weapons offensively as he does now in Philly. I mean, yeah, he had Dak and he had CeeDee Lamb, but I don't believe he had to the same extent weapon-wise. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody like, you know, Tony Pollard was a running back at that point in Dallas, and I think
Ferguson's pretty good. I mean,
yeah, but Tony Pollard's never been Saquon Barkley.
I agree with everything you're saying. The problem therein lies is that in Philly you've got one of the best offense lines in the NFL, and in Dallas you used to have one of the best offense lines in the NFL, and you no longer do. And the thing is, I would agree with you, but the bottom line is they got rid of Kellen Moore. So why, if he's not the issue, then why are we getting rid of him, right?
They got rid of Kellen Moore, and the next year they went 12-5, and they had a great offense.
My point is that if Mike McCarthy is this guy, and we're pointing to the 12-5 years, then he's got to be included in that conversation.
But they fired Kellen Moore, and they got better.
They were 12-5 when they fired him.
Yeah, and they got better offensively when they fired him, and he went out there, and he didn't do anything in L.A. He didn't do anything. We forget that he went out to L.A. and was brutally bad with the Chargers. Their offense their offense was not good. And then he goes to Philly and he inherits a King's gold chest. And yeah, he's doing fine with it. But it's not like they've set the world on fire, you know, in other places he's been. I understand your point, but I think it's easy to blame Mike McCarthy. He's been crapped on since the day he got there, and he only went 24-9 in some of those years.
You can't be down by 20 in 6 straight home games and not get crapped on as a head coach, especially the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not going to sit here and feel sorry for Mike McCarthy.
I don't feel sorry for him, but we've killed the guy when he was doing well, and now it's easy to say, well, fire him now, because he's essentially been a lame duck coach since the day he stepped in there.
It's ugly.
Where do you get these expressions from?
What?
A king's gold chest. Sorry.
You ever seen a king's, what do you call it, treasure?
Anyway, the sky is not falling here in Atlanta, despite an ugly Falcons loss 38-6 to the Denver Broncos on Sunday. And the quarterback, Kirk Cousins, he spoke with Dave Archer, the former Falcons QB and Falcons Radio Network analyst, about what the team needs to do during this bye week.
Well, we have to have some conversations to talk about how we can be better. And, you know, those are conversations. The conversations are one thing, but actually resolving it and getting answers is the other thing. And so that's what we've got to do. And I think that's probably priority number one on the bye week.
So I'm standing there, obviously, when this interview happens, because it was with Art, and I'm Arch, and I'm like, wait, what? And I knew that immediately I wanted to have this conversation, Mike, because you've been in these rooms where – and I would imagine the way I see this, and a lot of this has got a fan view, and when I hear this and look at this and think about it, is, oh, they're all sitting around watching film, and then somebody's like, well, what the hell were you doing there? Why'd you move? Or what happened here? Why'd you hold on there, Matt? And at the end of that run, And I don't think there's infighting. I don't think that's what it is, but I think I'm a guy that doesn't love confrontation, but I also think that it's a necessary part of life.
Healthy. It's healthy for a football team
sometimes.
It's necessary.
It's necessary for in all. I think it's not just a football team. I think in life in general,
confrontation in a football locker room and in meeting rooms. And confrontation is probably the wrong word. I don't want to use confrontation. But sometimes when you have to have these tough conversations, it builds urgency, right? When you know that somebody is not suggesting something but is irritated with you about the way you're doing something, it builds urgency, right? If I suggest, you know, you do something here at work, I'm like, hey, you know, you should do this, and then you don't do it the next time, then all of a sudden I get irritated, and then I'm like, hey, man, I thought I told you I needed you to do this.
Or I thought we talked about it.
Yeah, I thought we talked about this. And you didn't do it. And now all of a sudden it builds in a sense of urgency. And so I think that's probably some of the conversations they're having. I was going to say specifically on offense, but that's just the way I look at it. It's definitely happening on defense too. Because what you have is, especially when you get injuries, right? You have injuries and you've been telling, hey, I need you to cross train at this corner spot and that corner spot. I need you. We're not going to be able to get it in practice, but afterwards I need you to take reps at safety, right? We're not going to be able to get you the reps live in practice, but afterwards, I need you to be ready to play this spot on defense. I need you to be ready to play nickel, Richie Grant. I need you to do that. All right, you're going to have to take safety reps, but I need you ready to do this. And so, some of those conversations inside the locker room, when you turn on the film, right? And when you watch some of these guys do the same things that have been getting you beat at those positions, Kyle Pitts on the front of a wide zone and, you know, exposing his chest and not getting any movement, getting pushed in the backfield, you have to build that sense of urgency so the guys understand how imperative their job is moving forward for this offense and for this entire team to click. So the conversation, and I'm with you, when I hear Kirk Cousins kind of say some of those things, guys, you can hear it in his voice. He's like, I saw some things today that we've talked about and that aren't happening. And it starts with him, man. He looked uncomfortable at times in the pocket. He's got to move with more fluidity in the backfield if they're going to be able to get some things accomplished on offense. And you can hear that. You can hear that sense of urgency in the way he talks.
Also, the bye week going to be huge for that. But in healing up, there were some key injuries. He had a list of guys that were out going into the game and then players that were injured during the game. You had Darnell Mooney, your receiver, with a hamstring. Zach Harrison with a knee. Kevin King, your corner, with a concussion. KC Washington, also a concussion. And then Nate Landman with a hamstring injury.
Yeah, Landman's got it. He's That's, all over the place. He had the shoulder that he felt like he was grabbing onto multiple times. I know Wes and Arch mentioned it on the broadcast. Of all the things we just talked about, Darnell Mooney is the one that really, really is terrifying for me because I just think that Darnell Mooney – now, I think you could make the conversation about Troy Landman, but Nate Landman, but Troy Anderson is one of those guys that you feel like eventually is going to come back and hopefully get healthy. But Darnell Mooney does things that I don't think anybody else on our offense does. And he opens things up that I don't think that can be, you know, can happen with a Kadarius Hodge.
Well, defensively, you know, you go in there without D. Alford, Mike Hughes, your two of your top three corners because of the way they play. You go into that game without those guys. And I think James Smith-Williams and TQ Graham have both done good jobs as well. Up front at times, but then you look, do you want to talk offense? The fact that you couldn't run the ball, now they're a good run defense, but you couldn't run the ball at all, and Charlie Warner's not available. Yeah, that might prove that he helps out in the run game. I'm not saying it's the only reason, don't get me wrong.
No, I agree.
But
no,
I think when you don't have a pivotal guy like that in the run game, he's essentially your H-back, your fullback, whatever the hell you want to call
it. Your lead blocker. He is your lead blocker.
Yeah, and when you don't have him, and then no coincidence, you can't run the ball. Now you got to a point in the game where you weren't going to even be able to try to run the ball because you were behind so bad, so much, you know, that also leads into it. But this team was plagued from every part of the team was injured. And then the Darnell thing is he was slowed coming in the game.
And again, when we had this conversation yesterday, Tiff, I want to hammer home again the fact that this team should have never been beat the way they were on Sunday. And I think that bears mentioning because this is not an excuse talking about the injuries. What I'm talking about with the injuries is what it looks like moving forward, because what happened on Sunday should never happen. It should never happen. We've seen teams come in here shorthanded and put up a good fight a number of times, and yet the Falcons just get their doors blown off and Bo Nix goes 28 of 33.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. When we come back, the college football playoff rankings drop tonight. But we'll give you one insider's predictions on who's in, who's out next when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike and Bo already trying to predict the future with the college football playoff rankings.
Those That's what we do.
Drop tonight. And a lot is up for debate, but let's take a look at Heather Dinich from ESPN, their college football insider. She's got her top 25 college football playoff predictions before the actual rankings come out tonight. I'll just give you the top 10 here. She's got Oregon at 1, Ohio State at 2, Texas 3, Penn State 4, Indiana 5, Notre Dame 6, Miami at 7, Alabama at 8, Ole Miss at 9, Georgia at 10, I will do the top 12, and Tennessee at 11, and Boise at 12.
It's so weird to look at rankings because in the end, rankings, like we've said all along, rankings don't equal seedings, right? I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, and you look at what she's got, and she's got four Big Ten teams inside the top five. It can't end like that, you know what I mean? So you're going to obviously get the conference champions at 1 through 4, and all those Big Ten teams start to slide back, which means the two-loss SEC teams start to slide back. And there's just a lot of things left out there to be talked about, man. And I talked about it yesterday, and I think that Georgia fans, Tennessee fans, Ole Miss fans, all paying attention to it as well. Does whoever loses the SEC championship game get left out of the college football playoff? And I think that's going to be tough to swallow either way, that you played an extra game and got left out, or if you make it in with three losses, no matter who that team is, there's going to be somebody upset that didn't play there that has two losses and is somehow getting left out as well. So it's it's all going to be about how that game rolls.
I think if you have two teams in the SEC championship game at two losses, I believe that they're both in. I don't believe that they're going to leave either one of those teams out, because the incentive is still to make the conference championship game. They want to find a way to preserve that, because they don't want to give you a reason to say, well, what's the point of even going to that?
Right. Yeah.
You know, with 12 teams, it's no longer the outlier. Well, that's an elimination game. And yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. They're never going to – I believe that the committee would be hard-pressed to ever leave one of those teams out, because the hidden thing is this money. And it's revenue not only the network that's controlling the playoff, but the ADs that are controlling the playoff and these schools and college football, and they know where the money line is. You want to talk about teams being left out? What if there's a realistic situation the Big 12 champion could be left out? There's a realistic situation, because if Army beats Notre Dame this weekend and then finishes the season undefeated and wins the AAC, they could shoot up. If let's just say whoever the eventual Big 12 champion is loses another game before the title game, or loses, you know, maybe BYU loses again and they still make the title game, Colorado's in there. I think Colorado, if they make it, is A, going to be a little dangerous, and B, would get voted in.
I agree.
But
they're very dangerous.
The reason I bring that up is because it's the top five conference champions that are ranked the highest by the selection committee. And depending on what happens, those teams might not be, you know, there might be another conference champion ahead of them.
Yeah.
Right?
It's crazy to think about. And you and I had this conversation, 3 weeks ago, and I was like, I don't know, man, Big 12 champ might end up at 12. I was trying to make that argument. And now, you know, here we are 3 weeks later.
That's extremely realistic.
Oh, I know. Well, to my point, I said it 3 weeks ago, and you didn't want to believe me.
Well, because at the time, BYU and Iowa State were undefeated.
Here's what else I'll say about the two-loss SEC teams that we're talking about. I don't think it's even possibly realistic that all four, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Georgia and Alabama, all finish with their record still at two losses. One of those teams is going to take an L. I'm not so sure it won't be Alabama.
Ole Miss could lose this weekend.
Ole Miss could lose this weekend. Tennessee could lose against Vanderbilt. I mean, there's just those teams. And look, Georgia Tech, when they're playing well, is going to have a puncher's chance. All these rivalry games you can't tell me all four of those teams are going to win their rivalry games at the end of the year. Auburn against Alabama, Mississippi State against Ole Miss, Georgia, you know what I mean? Like, that's just not how it rolls in the SEC. So I know that the committee is sitting there, and they're probably talking about it, going, please, Jesus, let one of these teams lose the next couple of weeks so that we don't have egg on our face the same way you did last year, by the way. Ding.
Since you guys mentioned the Big 12 being left out before, Heather Dinich also has her first-round byes, and she has Oregon as the Big 10 champ, Texas as the SEC champ, Miami as the ACC champ, and she has Boise as the Mountain West champion.
Yeah. And she still has BYU in there, this Big 12 champ. I'm with Bo, though.
Those are the first round games. So those were the byes then. Right. But yes, BYU's in the first round.
Well, I think the big takeaway is just to point out that you said the first round by Boise being that number four seed, which everybody would have had slotted before the year as the Big 12 champ. And then, like, to Bo's point, if you slot in an Army, if they possibly beat Notre Dame, that kind of shakes things up in a big, big way. And remember, that Army-Navy game is after what would be the College Football Playoff Selection Committee setting up the playoffs.
And can you, because you like, we might have talked about this yesterday, or that was just an imaginary conversation that I had, but could you imagine, you know, Notre Dame to me being in there is a little bit fraudulent. They have the worst loss in the country, and they have a win, good win, I would say, at home against Texas A&M, but it's not the same. I think the A&M team has gotten much better. But if Army beats Notre Dame and goes undefeated and wins their conference, Hear me out. How could you slot Notre Dame as being in at six and then tell Army, well, you know, when you might have beat them when they were six in the college football playoff, but you got to go kick rocks even though you went undefeated in your conference.
Right. No, because, I don't know.
Because I don't, I mean, I'm not trying to crush Notre Dame or knock them or be, you know, any way, shape, or form, but who's Notre Dame played?
Well,
other than Texas A&M.
Yeah, they beat A&M.
That's
propping them up a little bit.
Yeah, but you turned around and lost to a Northern Illinois team who I think they've won like one game, two games all year.
It's one of the craziest losses definitely.
Oh, they're 6-4 now, so it's not as bad.
One of the craziest ones I can remember. I'll say this much too, when we brought up Big 12 champ, Mackenzie Brooks, who works for CBS Sports, she does such a good job. I think she's actually a Georgia grad, if I'm not mistaken. She was kind of going at Danny Cannell about the BYU thing, and I loved it. She's like, she's a Vegas kind of handicapper and follows that, and she was like, I would favor 8 SEC teams against BYU. It just, like, I was like, whoa.
That's
whoa.
Well, Danny Cannell, and I love Danny because he likes
one of us.
I love him because I know what he's doing, and he's just kind of poking bears because he thinks that gets him interaction. But he tried to post this, oh, this is the great SEC and who they had lost to. And Jacob Hester goes, oh, you can play this game too. And he posted who all they've beat. And I'm going to tell you, you look at some of these SEC teams that have went out. The fact that you have 1, 2, 3, 4 Big Ten teams in the top five, and you look at their schedules, I mean, dude, Florida and Georgia have played more ranked teams than anybody in the Big Ten will play, I think, combined all year. I swear, it's close. It's that close.
Will a different Falcons team emerge coming out of the bye week? We'll hear from quarterback Kirk Cousins on the other side when we come back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. This is the morning shift, and we're rolling along here. You guys have picked up the pieces after that Falcons lost 38-6 to the Broncos on Sunday?
No.
Okay.
I'm still in shambles.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough ask, Tiff. That's a tough ask.
Yeah. You know, I tell you what, it doesn't look good right now. It's been two losses. There seems to be regression defensively, slightly offensive regression, and I think it's basically just teams figuring you out. And this is the chess match of it where, okay, we've adjusted to you. Now it's time for us to adjust to them, right? And that's kind of where I see us offensively. Yeah. And I think defensively we're there in a way too. Now defensively you're banged up. But, you know, I hear panic and stuff, and I just think about the mentality that's kind of a soft mentality when you start panicking and freaking out and all is lost. All is lost. We got one win. We're going to have one win in the next six games. And I think it's too quick to fire that alarm off and to hit that button or whatever phrase you want to use that I'll probably butcher. What I would say is like, we've got to get some guys healthy, and our players, not just our coaches, but our players need to figure out what they're doing wrong and what they're not doing and make that adjustment.
Yeah, and I think, look, to your point, and I understand, I'm not panicking. I'm further along towards there probably than I was at this point last year, even though it was really, really gloom and doom last year. But I just, to me, some of the things you see, and you and I mentioned it, we started watching the All-22 this morning. You go in, and you know Charlie Warner's out, and one of the first things you notice is they try to run like a mid or wide zone behind Kyle Pitts, and Kyle Pitts is at the tight end on the play side and gets shoved in the backfield. And I think the curiosity for me is why at this point, like, am I going to blame Kyle Pitts for that because he's not getting movement on a drive block, on a wide zone, not getting hand placement and hat placement? Or am I going to say, why are we at this point in the season, and this point in Kyle Pitts' career, that we are expecting to be play side on a run play and somehow magically expect him to get that done? It's not going to happen, right? So therein comes the frustration for me. And I think the conversation is always, and you heard it on, you know, Steakhouse yesterday, and we've talked about it before, the conversation is always going to fall back into as well some of the positions you could have used depth and help in, and we have a backup quarterback that was our number 8 overall draft pick. So I am probably further along than you towards panic, which kind of scares me, to be honest, because I usually pride myself in being more level-headed at this point. But we seem to lack a counterpunch in certain aspects of our game. We seem to lack the ability. Okay, you can't get moved in the run game, or you can't pass protect. Let's run screens. Let's run draws. Let's run misdirection. It's the same thing defensively. Okay, they're going to pick apart what we're trying to do in cover three and route concepts. Oh, we should be able to blitz. Nope, can't get home. Let's rush three. Let's drop everybody. Let's go into all these zones. Nope, not working. Just picking you apart. And it's not like it's Tom Brady back there. We're talking about a rookie, Bo Nix. So I think when we came away from the Seattle game and you looked at how we felt after the Seattle game and the fact that you went in against a team you should beat and you got dominated pretty good, it's like, okay, well, we're going to have ups and downs in the NFL season. And then you saw what you saw against New Orleans, and you're like, it's a rivalry game. But this one I've got nothing for. And I think that scares me moving forward. And, coming up and mic'd up later on, I'm going to kind of diagnose and try to project, the games you have left on the schedule and what those games might look like. But it just nothing feels secure to me. Even looking at some of the scenarios facing some of the bad teams you're playing, nothing feels like it's a slam dunk, that is.
Maybe some answers will get resolved during the bye week. Kirk Cousins, he talked with former Atlanta Falcons QB Dave Archer, also a host of Falcons, also an analyst, on the Falcons radio network. And they discuss what needs to happen during the Falcons bye week.
Well, we have to have some conversations to talk about how we can be better. And, those are conversations. The conversations are one thing, but actually resolving it and getting answers is the other thing. And so that's what we've got to do. And I think that's probably priority number one on the bye week.
That just so rings out, is the actually resolving it and getting answers and resolving it is another thing.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of where I think you're on a team or you're a part of something where you owe it to not just yourself, but the rest of your team to be held accountable and to show accountability and to say, I've got to be better. I've got to do this. And everyone in that room has to do that. And I think sometimes that's where we think things can maybe get testy. But I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. I don't foresee that being the case anyways.
No, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be the case. It shouldn't be. Testy is probably a good word. It's not like they're going to get up and beat each other's throats. But testy is a good thing in an NFL locker room because, like I said, that means accountability. And sometimes guys sit back and they can see the end of the road and, in the schedule. And sometimes you have to kind of reset your goals. And that's where leadership steps in and says, hey, what you're doing, what I'm seeing on film is not good enough. And I think that, listen, unfortunately, when you go into a bye week coming off a good win and a good stretch, you can kind of cruise in, feel good, get your body right, get back to doing things. In this situation, you're not going to get any kind of mental reset or mental break. They are probably going to be stewing over this one for the foreseeable future.
Well, you heard Cousins talk about what needs to happen. He said conversations. What are the details in those conversations? What's going to take place? Here's Coach Raheem Morris on what needs to be fixed.
I think it's a little bit of all of it. Some of his scheme, some of us putting players in different positions, some of us doing different things across the board. I think everything that you're talking about when it comes to football will be thought about and will be potentially applied to us going out to the next outing. So, whatever it takes to win football games, what we're willing to do. And I know my guys upstairs and my guys on this football team are willing to do all those things.
I said it yesterday. I think scheme has a pivotal part in this because I think sometimes, Mike, you tell me what you know, and Tiff, you've been around this game as much as anybody, what you guys think, but I think sometimes you got to adjust your scheme to the personnel you have on the field. And when you lose people, when you don't have your starting two of your three starting cornerbacks, counting the nickel, maybe you've got to play differently. Maybe you can't leave these guys so far back. When you're missing, guys up front, or you're not getting production from those guys, or, I don't know, the only two healthy linebackers that you have that you came into the season with on the roster because the other two are out, you maybe adjust what they're doing. You can't just do this everything the same no matter who's out there, right?
Yeah.
Or am I crazy?
No.
Can you adjust for... And not disparaging anyone, but for talent, that's
what I'm saying.
That's hard to replace.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're spot on. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, if I don't have D. Alford, who I know plays aggressive and can play tight up on that nickel spot when needed to, or can play back and still read and react quickly, then maybe I go pull the third or fourth nickel when I have Richie Grant in there trying to play it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like last week defensively, and we can get to offensively here in a minute because I know that there's some room there, but defensively I felt like, hey, we know we're missing all these guys, but we're not going to change a damn thing.
That's what it felt like when Kevin King went out, for sure. Because I'm sitting there going, okay, Natron Brooks is up. They'll put him to the outside. They'll slide Clark Phillips to the nickel. It just seems like the logical thing to do. And yet you put in Richie Grant at the nickel throughout the rest of the first half, and Richie Grant has struggled at safety and coverage. So now he's going to go play nickel, and he's going to be able to pattern match and do some of those things. And you got ate up because of it. And you made those changes at halftime. But there's and to Raheem's point, and I love that soundbite from Raheem, but it's all over the field. And it's not just one thing. And, you know, Tiff, I like your comment about how do you replace when you don't have talent. That, like, let's just look as far as our offense, and I brought this up yesterday. There's six first-round picks starting on our offense, and another one sitting on the bench. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's like, dude, the talent is there. We've got one of the highest-ranked offensive lines in terms of what they do. How can you build on that? How can you build counters off of wide zone? How can you, I don't know, maybe pull a guard? That'd be crazy to think about, right? No, I keep bringing that up from time to time. How do you get better at your screens? How do you put in different screens? You know, Sunday, you saw Ray McLeod trying to chip on the way out to help Jake Matthews. And it ended in a disaster because he chipped Jake Matthews instead of chipping the defensive end.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing.
No,
because...
and it's laughing because it's a comedy of errors, dude. And like you have to schematically look at that and go, why is this happening? And why is this one of the things that we are depending on to be able to go win this game? So I think it's just everybody on the field, aside from like three players, has to play harder. And I think schematically, as any good coach will say, they have to do they have to do a better job of putting these guys in a position to succeed. And that starts with Raheem. He knows offense and defense, but it does trickle down immediately to Jimmy Lake and Zach Robinson, and then getting more out of the guys that they're putting up to bat on a weekly basis.
Well, Tiffany just said it. How do you know with the talent thing? You also got to know people's strengths. And while I've been very on the record about I'm not going to sit here and say I can't. Don't tell me I can't ask Kyle Pitts to block because he's a tight end. And if I can't ask him to block, then the reality of the situation is you know it's coming. But can we go ahead and just not ever ask Ray McLeod to block again unless it's downfield? Because on the one screenplay maybe all year that you've ran efficiently, it was all because Kadarrell Hodge was able to make a guy miss because Ray didn't block anybody there either.
Yeah.
And Ray Ray's fun. He is he makes big catches
clutch,
constantly.
Man. Clutch player.
He's probably the most unique dressed NFL player I've seen in a while.
Other than Joe Burrow? He's ahead of Joe Burrow?
Unique. Well, you didn't let me finish. Unique in a fashionably
acceptable
way. I mean, I don't know what it is that Joe Burrow, who was the player that wore the blouse the other day, the former NFL player that wore the blouse on the field?
Oh, Eagles.
It was the Eagles guy,
Fletcher Cox.
Yeah.
Fletcher Cox, yeah. You
want to say something to him about it?
Joe Burrow and Fletcher Cox.
I will. Yeah,
he can. Joe Burrow and Fletcher Cox are essentially, they're using the same stylus apparently because, I don't know, I mean, the
wear what you want. Who cares?
Well, you know what? Then don't criticize people for celebrating Halloween, Joe. I'm still pissed off about that. Joe Burrow doesn't come after one of my favorite holidays and get to wear a pantsuit the next day to a damn NFL game, all right? That's a horrible look. I'm sorry. That's my rant. That's my TED Talk. Thanks for joining.
He did go in on Halloween for no reason.
Which undrafted quarterback finds himself back in a starting position this coming week? Details on the way when we go in the huddle next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The long rebound taken by the Kings. And now they're not going to call. It's time. 5 seconds left. Fox. Fox fires it. It's blocked by Dyson Daniels. Saves it now to Trey Young, who got pushed off the floor. The game is over. The game is over, and the Hawks win. Dyson Daniels, the defensive player of the year in the NBA, just blocked the great De'Aaron Fox, and the Hawks win by a point.
Steve Holman on the call. Of course, the Hawks games, Atlanta, or 92.9 The Game is your home for Atlanta Hawks games. As the Hawks, you heard on the call, go on to beat the Kings 109-108 on Dyson Daniels' game-saving play there. And it was a night in which you saw Trae Young, just 7 points, but a monster game when it comes to dishing the ball out. He had 19 assists.
I just can't imagine. I can't imagine how excited previous me would have been hearing him say, defensive player of the year, the Atlanta Hawks. It just doesn't seem like two things that have belonged in the same sentence for the last decade. And yet here we are, talking about a guy in Dyson Daniels who just showed up. And really, I mean, let's be honest, nobody for the most part paid that much attention to the Dyson Daniels part of this trade. When you got rid of DeJounte Murray, and it was all about what you gave up for DeJounte Murray and what you got back in return, and Dyson Daniels just an afterthought, young guy, a lot of upside. But, man, I don't think Holman's that far off. This is a guy who has done so much defensively in such a short period of time. You add that to the length of Zach Risacher and DeAndre Hunter, the combination there at the three and everything else going on with this team. And I don't know what the Hawks are. I don't know what the future looks like for the Hawks, but it seems like to me as they continue to get more healthy – that they're gonna make some noise here, in the mid parts of the season and through Christmas.
Yeah, like Dyson Daniels defensively, I mean, he's averaging almost 4 steals a game. That's pretty good. And 15 games in, he's just been phenomenal. I said it earlier. We're a franchise in the Hawks that predominantly comes out on the raw end of the deal when there's trades made. I mean, nationally, the perspective is that we lost the Luka trade. I don't necessarily agree with that. I've never said that. I think that both teams can win, but depending on what month and year you ask, you can say, yeah, we lost it. We lost it because last June we were all saying we lost it, and that's okay. It goes ups and down, but. You know, to me, the worst trade in NBA history, because I'm extremely close to it, was Dominique Wilkins in a year where you won, almost 60 games?
Right.
You trade him away for Danny freaking Manning, who left after that. You know, the DeJounte Murray trade, recent history, where you trade 3 first-round picks for a guy who comes here. You're in the play-in round both years he was here, and he was disgruntled. And you can argue about the disgruntled, but he literally told you he was disgruntled as soon as he went to New Orleans. And so I know he broke his hand in opening night. They've got nothing out of him so far. We've gotten a lot out of Dyson Daniels. But the bigger picture is that Trae is comfortable with his team and everything about it. Because as Tiff pointed out earlier, in a night where he was 1-for-7 from the floor and scored 7 points, he dished it for 19 assists,
yeah,
and he still played like 36 minutes. And then you get DeAndre Hunter, who's now off the bench because of the addition of Risacher with the first overall pick. Boom. And, by the way,
Ding.
You got Bogey and Kobe Bufkin back. So yeah. For the first time, as you said earlier, all year, you feel like maybe you're getting healthy.
And it's funny how 24 hours can change them. We talked about them being on the second half of a back-to-back, and it's like the Hawks, it just seems like never play well in the second half of back-to-back. It's kind of like Braves on Sundays. The Hawks just never in the back-to-back play well. And yet they go out to the West Coast. They're able to knock this one off. I think they were 5-point underdogs at the beginning of the game against the Kings. I'm watching the game Sunday night doing the post-game for the Falcons. And I'm like going on this 5-minute rant about how bad the Falcons looked against the Broncos. And I look up, and the Hawks are inbounding a ball off somebody's head in the Portland Trailblazers game. And it hits the ground. Somebody else dunks it. Trailblazers on a 25-2 run. I'm like, this couldn't get any worse. And yet the Hawks are able to pick it back up and get a big win and now move to 7-8. Like I said, I don't know what this team is, but, man, a lot better vibes right now than it would have been had you had 2 points less last night.
The defensive player of the year of the NBA.
Yeah, bring it to me. I love it, man. I love it.
Let's get a check on what's going on with the latest NFL. Headlines. All right, we are going in the huddle, and up in New York, things not going well for the Giants. Not talking about the Jets, surprisingly. This statement from head coach Brian Daboll, he said, after evaluating and watching a lot of tape, that's the reason we are going with Tommy DeVito as the starting quarterback. He said Drew Locke will be the backup. So he said this move was necessary for us, and I'm looking forward to working with Tommy. He'll be ready to go against Tampa Bay this weekend. So Daniel Jones officially benched.
Yeah, and some of the reports I read yesterday, guys, were that Brian Daboll feels like, and there are some people in the front office that feel like that Dable's coaching for his job over the next few weeks towards the end of the season. And he felt more comfortable with Tommy DeVito. And it's like you're playing, you know, Drew Locke's in on a one-year, $5 million contract. You're a $5 million backup. And yet you got, you know, leapfrogged into the starting role when Daniel Jones doesn't show up, you know, for the first 10 games or whatever it is at this point for them. And he just felt like he was more comfortable with Tommy DeVito with his job on the line, which I think says a lot about where this franchise is at, man. And like I said, we'll get into it next segment about, you know, the Falcons matchup with them down the road. But it's a decision that I think Dable felt like he needed to make because that's a situation that's going downhill quickly.
If you're going to go down, you might as well go down your way and with the people you feel comfortable, you know, executing your plan. So I don't blame Dable. I don't know. Maybe Daniel Jones is the future for him is a clipboard and running in every two to three games a year at the most. And, you know, maybe given that Ryan Fitzpatrick bump that backup QBs will give you for a couple of games and then going back to the bench.
I think it is curious to look at it, though, because I know that there's kind of a very, very narrow edge for the Jags to be the number one pick, but the Giants, the Browns, and the Raiders are all kind of right there. And at least three of those teams probably would like a quarterback, right? So you look at that situation, and I'm not saying that anybody would ever tank in that given situation, but I know that some people out there are at least thinking it in terms of you playing Tommy DeVito down the stretch run for the Giants after you had shown interest in Jaden Daniels last year and you know what might be out there this season.
Well, since you brought up the Jags, they're coming off a 52-6 major lopsided loss to Detroit. Detroit hung up, what, 50-plus twice this season? Didn't they do it to the Cowboys? Or was that...
Well, I think they got 47 okay. against the Cowboys. Maybe was it 47-6, I think?
You can round up. Needless to say, things are not going well in Jacksonville for the Jags. And Coach Doug Peterson says he is still evaluating potential changes to the coaching staff, that everything is on the table.
I got to be completely flat out honest with you guys, and I know Bo loves when I am. I am shocked that we're still on Tuesday talking about Doug Peterson as the head coach of the Jags. And you never like to see these head coaches go down, but I just think it's funny that he's still evaluating. He's like, I'm still evaluating. Everything's on the table. I'm like, dude, I'm surprised that you're being allowed to make some of those decisions. I don't know if you guys saw the news with Tom Herman being fired, right? The FAU head coach.
Yeah.
They actually brought back the defense coordinator that Tom Herman fired a week ago. Like, they were like, hey, sorry about that, man. We're going to get rid of him. Can you step back in here? Can you step back in? I know a lot of that has to go with recruiting, but that's kind of what I look at when I look at this Doug Peterson situation. I'm like, who are you going to fire? You know, you're going to fire, like, Ryan Nielsen? Like, I feel like in 2 weeks when Doug Peterson gets fired, you're going to be like, hey, man, that's on us. Sorry about that. Can you come back in? Are you still in town? Great to have you back.
I heard I've talked and I've listened, and you know, guys, I'm always trying to keep my pulse on what people in the media and the fan base are saying. But I've heard of Ryan Nielsen's name thrown out a lot lately about what he, you know, look at what he did with this defense. Maybe we just had a better talent-wise defense than we realized last year, because Ryan Nielsen's defense is, I've tried to go back and look, and they've been pretty abysmal. I mean, they've not been very good on defense. They've not been very good on all. They haven't been good anywhere. And so it's just, Doug Peterson, to me, he caught lightning in a bottle in one season, yeah. And that was pretty much the gist of his coaching career. Yeah,
it really has been. He actually was quoted yesterday as saying, and he was asked about Ryan Nielsen's job status. He said, I think you got to be really, really careful when starting to point fingers at certain people. That's a dangerous thing, and I'm not going to do that. Not doing it. Not right now. As a head coach in this league that's going through what we're going through, you pointing a finger. Yeah, I mean, well... But then why is everything on the table, I guess, is my question. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of dysfunction down there right now, and that's a team that felt like they were in a win-now mode just not long ago.
That's because if you tell me that you don't like something, I'll fire them to save myself.
Right.
That's what's everything's on the table. Doug Peterson is like, how can I save my job to get maybe, you know, a couple more million extended in a couple years from now?
We did already touch on Monday Night Football. If you missed that, Cowboys lost to the Texans 34-10. Not good there. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. What do we have coming up?
Well, Tiff, we're going to do a little bit of a Falcons schedule look ahead. What's realistic throughout the remainder of the season? And then when we get to a mic'd up, What is a trading card worth when you talk about baseball cards? Well, the Pittsburgh Pirates tried to put a value on one of them. You're not going to believe the offer they have out there. That's coming up next on Mic'd Up on Sports Radio. 92.9 The Game.
Rolling along here on the morning shift. We have a Mic'd Up ahead. But before we get there, we can look ahead to the Falcons' remaining schedule. They are headed to the bye week this week. But I don't know what you think of the slate coming up, but maybe there's some W's in there.
Yeah, Tiff, they got the Chargers coming up December 1st, and that's going to be an interesting game as well. Chargers seem to be a team playing at a pretty high level, getting better. You know, I don't know what you thought, what anybody thought when Jim Harbaugh took over, but, you know, kind of figured they were in a slight, I don't want to say rebuilding mode, but they were kind of, you know, at a flux in terms of where that team was and with Keenan Allen and everything else going on with what they have been. And so that's going to be a tough one as well. Minnesota at Minnesota on Sunday, December 8th. So I'll stop right there with those first two, and I'll ask you guys, how are we feeling about those two games coming off the bye week and hopefully with fresh legs?
Well, you're going to win both of them.
That's how you feel?
Oh, okay.
I think you got to take one of those. And I say still one. I mean, I just think you got to take one of those games. Coming off the bye at home, you should win. Yeah. Not that you can beat them, and that they're easily beatable. That's not what I'm saying. But in the NFL, if you want to be a playoff team, you get a bye, you're playing at home, teams coming across the country, essentially, literally coast to coast, and you should win that game. Yeah. That's a game that you should win. Healthy, fresh, all those things. And then you look, and you got the Vikings game, and that, you know, the Vikings have played well this year, but are you telling me that you think the Vikings are head and shoulders better than us? They look that way record-wise, but
that's a tough one.
They've struggled as of late offensively. So now they've got some playmakers in Jefferson, and is it Hockenson is their tight end?
I was going to say, you know, my thing with Minnesota is I'm not sure what we do better than they do. That's the frustrating part, because I'm looking at those receivers going – Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison are not the kind of guys that you want to give a big cushion to and let them catch things underneath, because they're the kind of guys that speed-wise will stiff-arm somebody and they'll be up the seam before you can even get your head around good. Especially if you have to, you know, I don't know what the future holds for Mike Hughes and D. Alford, but especially if you're having to play some of the guys that we had to play last weekend in that game, that matches up as a tough one. So
I think we run the ball better than them. Okay. I think we're a better running team. I think we've got a better quarterback. Now, their receiving core, I think, is better when you put Justin Jefferson, yeah, who is probably the best, if not top three. You know, Jamar Chase is in that category in the NFL right now, and then you've got Jordan Addison, who seems frustrated lately, but is a very good player. And I think Hockenson is a heck of a tight end.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a very good player, and I mean, Aaron Jones can catch the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah, he definitely can. The next two games after that, at Vegas and then New York at home, those are two teams that are vying for that, you know, first overall pick. We just talked about them a minute ago.
Those are teams that want to lose. You got to help them lose.
Right. Well, the front offices might want to lose. The players, I promise you, don't want to.
What I mean by that is Tiffany just saw the Raiders, so she can probably speak more, but right, everything I've seen from them is they do things on the field that good teams take advantage of to beat them.
Yeah.
Like, and I say that, that's what I mean by they want to lose. You have to go take it from them. You can't leave them hang around.
Yeah, they were, I saw them week four, game which they lost to the Browns, and a lot has changed since then, leading to when I saw them on Sunday in Miami against the Dolphins. It was a game that they were kind of in it at first. It's actually one of Garner Minshew's better games that he's had with them, but they've had a lot of mistakes. You mentioned kind of how they lose games, right? And there, I think back to our stats, there's been like eight games or something where they were actually leading, but they can't find a way to hold on to the lead. So penalties have been a major issue. That was something that came up in our meeting with Coach Antonio Pierce ahead of the game. And then I talked to him for the first quarter interview because penalties were getting them again. They also made the changes going into the bye week to the offense. That was all AP's decision, Antonio Pierce, to fire Luke Getsy. And then they promote Scott Turner to their offensive coordinator, who, by the way, brought in his dad, Norv Turner, you know, out of retirement to come help with the assist there. But, you know, they were looking to kind of try to establish the run game, but just didn't seem like anything was working for them. And, of course, you had Tua being able to extend all these plays with his legs. But it's just unfortunate for the Raiders. Those were two teams going into this past weekend that both needed to win to try to salvage their seasons. The Dolphins can still try to find a way to sneak into the playoffs, but you know, Raiders, it's not looking so good right now.
Yeah, and whoever is the coordinator over there seems to really love Brock Bowers. He continues to just be one of the greatest, honestly, one of the greatest rookie tight ends in the history of the NFL. Would you see what he's doing? And
he called him an X factor for that team in our meeting again going into the game, just how much. Basically, he said Brock was as advertised.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
they are definitely getting their bang for their buck out of him and then some.
Yeah. Well, and then you look at the final two games at Washington. I think that's going to be, in terms of what they do, probably the most difficult of all six of these remaining games. In terms of what Jaden Daniels do and their ability to stretch the field, can you force him into a bad decision? And if you can't, they're a team that obviously with Dan Quinn at the helm is going to play good defense, and they're going to probably get after you at the quarterback position. And then, you know, you never know what happens with Carolina. That's a game that the Falcons should go and win, but to end the season, you never really know what you're going to get in those situations. All right, let's go ahead and hit a mic, though. Yeah, shout out to John Foy. Again, shout out to everybody from the weekend that got a chance to hang out with down in Griffin, Georgia at Buffalo's Cafe. Good time there, good atmosphere, a lot of good things going on. Also, wake up call coming up at the top of the hour. If you want to weigh in on what you think, what you want to project for the Falcons in these remaining six games, which games are winnable, which games are not, make sure you give us a ring here at the top of the hour. All right, so the Pittsburgh Pirates, I wanted to bring this up. This news came out over the weekend. There is a baseball card that has been made, and I want to get to the name of the baseball card before I get you with what's been offered for it. So it's a Paul Skenes one-of-one rookie debut patch autograph. So it has, you know, the jersey logo that says Major League Baseball debut. It's been autographed by Paul Skenes, and it is a one-of-one. It is a one-of-one from Topps. So obviously, baseball cards, a little bit of a resurgence here recently, a lot of popularity. You see the unboxing videos that happen all the time on Twitch or whatever else. Well, the Pirates have kind of jumped into this whole saga, right? And before this has even been found, they already put an offer out on the table to whoever finds this baseball card. Here's what they've got. Two Pirates season tickets behind home plate for 30 years. For the next 30 years, you will have two Pirates season tickets behind home plate. A softball game for you and 30 of your closest friends at PNC Park with coaching from Pirates alumni players. And a spring training experience like no other that gives you a private tour, a meet and greet with Paul Skenes, two Paul Skenes autographed jerseys, batting practice on the field, and other unique stuff. I don't know what the number value is on this card. I'm sure it probably has gone up since this announcement. But I don't know that there's anything that I wouldn't trade for two behind home plate season tickets for the next 30 years at the Braves games.
Is Livy Dunn going to be a part of the meet and greet?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. That rookie of the year thing was so awkward.
Already transitioning to your creepy old man phase.
That's right. Might as well.
I don't think he's alone in that one. But then, and by the way, Ding. Major League Network or Major League Baseball Network or whatever, they transition as well. I haven't heard as part of that rookie of the year announcement. That was strange. Anyways, but like I said, I don't know. Like, what is it? The Delta Club right behind home plate for the Atlanta Braves?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know that there is.
I've never sat there, Tiff has.
Anything. Big time. Big time.
Whatever.
Well, you knew it so quickly. You're like, yeah, that's definitely what it is.
Yeah, definitely.
Whatever.
I don't know if there's anything, guys, a baseball card or anything, number value, it would have to be astronomical for me to turn down 30 seasons worth of season tickets in the Delta Club behind home plate. I don't know. Like, I'm looking at this but going, what is not, this card
but,
worth?
But what if it's not a Pirates fan? See, that's where the rub comes in.
Yeah.
So if you're not a Pirates fan and you find it, do you – I would still take it. I would sell them for like half off because
I'd have to see what the card is valued at. I mean, that the value of those season tickets over the next 30 years has got to be insane.
Dude, it's the Pirates.
Well, I mean, we've got to be talking about like, you think we're at eight figures at that point?
Yeah, but remember,
tickets behind for 30 years?
Yeah,
are we at 10 million?
I don't know what those tickets go
and
for.
And you're saying it's the Pirates. What if they're playing, I don't know, like a really good team?
Well, over the past, that's true. But over the past, you know, 30 years the Pirates have not been. It's the truest club.
The
lesser of the Bozeman radio station, my boy Bo Johnson.
Used to be the Delta Club.
I think it did when it was at Turner, but okay. Bo worked.
I sat there in the truest club. So, yeah.
Well, you should have known the name.
I'm just kidding.
But Bo works at
Tiffany, your bougie is showing.
At truest.
No, it's not. I'm joking. I'm kind of joking. Pretty sure. I don't know. I don't know where I sit, guys. And I've only been to a couple of games because of my schedule. So, anyway, when we come back here on the morning shift, let's get to the wake-up call. Mike said if you want to let us know what the Falcons should do over the bye week, what you'd like to see changed, you can give us a shout. Call us at 404-726-0929. The wake-up call is next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake-up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. And as we discuss, if you want to weigh in on what the Falcons need to do during their bye week, we heard Kirk Cousins saying they need to have some conversations. You heard Raheem Morris talk about how they need to maybe do some things with the scheme. You can give us a call and give us your thoughts right here on the wake-up call.
Yeah.
I have a wake-up call for myself, but not involving sports, but kind of sports travel. I was boarding in Fort Lauderdale to come home from my game on Sunday, and I waited far away from the line. And so they're calling the zones. They're calling people that need extra assistance. They're calling military. And then they say zone one. So no, I see no movement. So I walk, you know, right up, and as I'm already up, there's not really a lot of people behind me, but then there's this older couple, and this old grumpy old man is talking some stuff. He's like,
uh-oh.
I guess she thinks she's important. I guess that's one way to do it. Have your earbuds in and then just walk to the front of the line. So I'm sitting here like,
this is going
to
be me.
So I took my headphones off and I said, do you have something to say to me?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
And he was like, well, you know, we were all waiting in line. I was like, what are you? So pause there. I don't know if they're, I'm out of it, right? I get worked up on game days. I didn't eat breakfast, barely ate anything, run around in 80 degree weather. So I don't know if there's a line or not, but I didn't see movement. I walked right up. So he's like, whoa, she called military. I was like, sir, she called military. And then she said zone one. He still wanted to argue with me. Mm-hmm. He's arguing on the way down the jet bridge. I'm already outstriding him because he is a grumpy old man.
And you have a long gait.
And he is still saying, so he still says stuff. And I turn around and I was like, you have a great flight. He's like, no, you have a great flight. I'm talking to my wife. I was like, all right, whatever, bro. So I got on the flight. So then I start thinking, I'm like, did I, being in the state that I was in, just like oblivious, did I just walk in front? You know, you don't see the line. Like, so I'm like, did I actually do that?
Yeah.
I don't know if I did or not, but I was not with the you-know-whats that day. And an old man almost got told some things in line. So,
well, how did his wife react? Because normally
she didn't say anything. So you already know what kind of old man he is. He probably does this all the time. He's probably grumpy all the time. The wife probably didn't say like, "Oh, Jim, be quiet."
You're making quite a leap here to just think that this guy's always like that.
When I'm saying when it's a couple like that, usually like I could see my mom be like, "Don, you know, zip it, Don, whatever." But you could tell this grumpy old man probably is grumpy majority of the time.
Man,
but I'm not a jerk. I usually am the last one to board in my zone because I'm in no rush to try to get my stuff up. It's going to make it.
Yeah. Well,
so, but I could have been oblivious yesterday trying to get home. So if you're on that flight out there, let me know.
I was going to say, I wonder if we can find security
cameras. I don't know. Let me know. Was I that guy that just rolled up with big headphones on and just walked in? I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
I know. The worst the gate? People, we can find out. I might know people in Fort Lauderdale.
D7 or something.
See, here's the problem. First off, people, I hate this. This is my pet peeve in flying.
The worst part about flying.
Is people,
that's why I hate traveling.
Even when you're getting close to boarding time, people run up
exactly.
And surround the gate. So you don't know who the hell is what, when's
but
what.
But that's not my play. I don't want to be
understand.
Anywhere near anybody.
But I understand. But
you said you boarded in zone one.
I do, but yeah. I never just stand up there and congregate.
But
because I get a text on my phone or I'm paying attention to see, okay, it's lit up and I'll get to the end of the line in zone one.
And this is my defense of you, is that people do that. So when you walk up, and you hear your zone called, you have no clue where the line starts, where it doesn't start. You just walk up and you're trying to get on because your zone has been called. So it create it, because these people that have to stand there like a bunch of dum-dums, you create that issue where Tiffany doesn't know where the line is. I understand that. Not to mention, the airport brings out the worst in a human being. So this guy is already angry. He's in the airport. He has no clue what's going on. He
Grandpa,
probably can't even hear the zones.
Slow. You
I take
slow.
Up with Tiffany here.
Grandpa.
Grandpa, like, Gramps, you were slow. I'm sorry. She said military.
I got Tiff's back.
Nobody moved. She said zone one. Hey. I proceed to board. Sorry.
Not your fault. Sorry, it's honestly not your fault.
don't talk about Joe Burrow's outfit, but if Tiffany wants to call this slow grandpa geriatric, we could definitely go there.
It clearly could have been me, but like
I did talk about Joe Burrow's outfit and this old man.
Had he approached it differently or something? Because normally, like, my bells didn't go off because I was like, well, man, I'm never first. Was I actually first in line aboard? But there are people ahead of me. I don't really know what was going on. Again, you know.
This is all I want to say before we get the phone line. The real enemy here is the airline. Okay? The real enemy is the airline. You know why everybody crowds? Because they don't want to get their bag checked or put under the airplane.
Yes.
They want the overhead bin. Right? And that's the real enemy in this entire thing is they crowd up because they want to get first crack at the overhead bin.
This is true. Yeah. You don't want to check your bag.
So, It's like you know, my wife and I have the conversation. It's not me versus her. It's us versus the kids. You know what I mean? Like when we go to travel, it's like, you're not the enemy. They are. All right. Make sure we keep that in sight.
So I just had to get that off my chest.
I'm glad you did.
Hope he was listening this morning. Maybe not, because he's not a happy person. All right. Let's go to the lines.
We got listen to me.
Squid Billy in Dallas, Georgia. Good morning.
Morning, everybody. Morning, Elder Squid.
Sir.
When it comes to airplanes and airports, the stand-up comedian Brian Regan has a great bit on that whole situation. I would YouTube it, give it a listen. He's hilarious, one of my favorites.
Love it.
When it comes to the Falcons, you know, I will be happy with going 500 in this last stretch, getting a winning season under the belt. I wanted 11 wins coming into this season. I think that's still possible, but it's going to be hard work to do that. But I'm still pleased with the team. Obviously, some disappointments along the way, but pleased overall. Love the show, you guys.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
I think I'm right there. I think with what I saw this past weekend, I would be pleased with 500. I would have had my sights set higher. Specifically, if you could have beat the Saints, it would feel different. But I think you look at this last stretch and just beat the teams you're supposed to and stay in a fight with teams that should be tough games.
Yeah, dude. I think 10 wins the division. I know that everybody's talking about Tampa's getting somewhat healthy and they've got a weak schedule. Still the NFL. You still got to play games. Weird things happen. Go get 10 wins and see where the pieces fall. That's to me, you need to win. You need to go 4-2 in this 6-game stretch.
Be tough.
It is going to be tough, but guess what? That's what you got to do. You got to do it. You got to make the playoffs.
Let's go back to the lines. We have Ramil waiting on us. Good morning.
What's up?
Good morning, guys.
What's going on?
Not much. I got a wake-up call for the defensive line, man. Sometimes watching the game when we're on defense, like watching 7-on-7 drills. Mm. It's kind of horrible to watch this. I'm hoping these last games that these go 500.
Oh, man. You're so spot on, man. And I think that we've had this conversation, and it's like I am the last person I feel like we talk about this. I'm the last person on this radio station who wants to ever talk about effort. Like effort is such a I don't know why, but effort gets me right. Effort is one of those things that just gets in my crawl. When people say, "Well, they're not giving good effort," it just feels like that at times. And we talked about the screen game yesterday from Denver and the lack of ability from our defense line to retrace their steps and get out into the flat and make plays. A lot of times that's effort. I think that's why you've seen. And we saw it a couple weeks ago. That's why you've seen D'Angelo Malone get on the field a little bit more, right? That's why you've seen, and due to injuries, Brandon Dorlus get in the rotation. It's clear to me that Raheem wants effort from that position right now, and I don't know that we're getting it at maximum to the maximum extent at all times.
All right, let's go to DJ on the line. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, y'all. How y'all doing?
What's up, buddy?
Oh, none. Good, good, good. Hey, me and my wife recently just went up to Blue Ridge and saw the statue of Early Squid Billy up there, and she's very happy about that.
Yes! I love it.
I think that the Falcons need to, because of the age of pretty much the average age of every Falcons player, grew up watching Denzel Washington being coached Calhoun and leading the Titans to a state championship, why don't they just hire Denzel to come in there and give the team a pep talk? I think that this is the time to do that on the bye week and really rally the troops to the end of the year. Thanks, guys.
You know, it's funny. I was telling that story the other day to Bo about how when Rise Up, I'm drawing a blank.
Samuel L.
When Samuel L. was brought in to do the Rise Up live in person, that nobody even knew what was going on. Like, they were like, man, this is really going to get the crowd going. And they tried to hide him in a security jacket and walk into midfield. And, like,
I remember that.
It was too hidden. People were like, why is the security guard on the big screen yelling Rise Up? And it was like nobody even caught on to it. So I don't know that Denzel would crack a difference.
Can Denzel, Coach Boone, bring his DC with him and we blitz all night? And then remember the night they played the Falcons instead of the Titans? You know?
Well, maybe the Falcons together during their bye, we can get together and watch that movie. We'll find out what they really are going to try to accomplish during the bye when we hear from the quarterback Kirk Cousins next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift, and the Falcons are headed into the bye week. So we had some folks call in during our wake-up call to try to figure out what this team could change or maybe improve during their bye.
You know what's strange, Tiff, is I'm a very positive person, I feel like, when it comes to my sports teams, and I know Bo is too. I feel like Bo has me beat here, though. I feel like this is one of those – I don't think normally we've approached this way. But I think you've got me beat on this one, where you were talking about calling for 4-2 and you need to get that done. I'm struggling a lot more with that based on what we saw this past couple of weeks. So I want to err on the side of what you're thinking, not mine.
Well, look, I can hope and wish, and I'm more positive than people give me credit for.
I agree with that.
I really am.
No,
I
agree.
I'm a very
Tiff's laughing, but.
But I'm a very positive just because I'm very blunt and realistic at times about stuff doesn't mean that I'm not a positive outlook
right.
human being.
I agree.
And I look at this and I see Chargers and Vikings. I think you can – all right, let's put it this way then. Let's go through this. If you're a playoff team and you've got playoff caliber roster and a playoff coaching staff – that knows how to win games, you should beat on November 19th, as we stand, you should beat the Raiders, the Giants, and the Panthers.
Sure.
You should win those games.
Yes.
I don't want to hear, but they did this. What about the set? No. We're having a hypothetical conversation. You should win those three games. Okay? Everybody agree?
Yeah. No, I think that that's fair.
Okay. So you're telling me then that you can't steal one game from the Chargers, Vikings, or Commanders. You're telling me that we're so bad now after two straight losses, the first time you've lost two straight games under the Raheem Morris era. I know it's only 11 games in. All that. You're telling me that you can't steal a game from a flawed Commanders, a flawed Chargers, or a flawed Vikings team. Because if not, you're telling me those teams are absolutely perfect in every way, shape, or form. You can't match up with them. Because I think you have areas where you're better than them if you play, coach, and execute like it.
No, and I agree with you. And I think where my skepticism and what you just said comes from is right before what you just said, you said those are three teams we should beat. I think those three teams are all looking at the Falcons much in the way you just said we should be looking at
Washington.
We can
steal one.
We can if we need to go out there and steal one, we can get the Falcons. They're not very good.
I don't give a...
I know. And that's my whole point of this entire thing is usually I feel like I try to bring the vibes in and all that. And I look at that and go, they're thinking the same thing about us.
I choose, Tiffany's going to chuckle and heckle me after this. I choose to be happy in life, not like wallow in misery, right?
Right.
I don't choose to have negative outlooks about every single thing. I'm real about stuff. And the real tells me that my roster is better than Vegas. My roster is better than New York's, and my roster is better than Carolina's. I don't think my roster is worse than the Chargers. Not offensively, for sure.
Right.
Defensively, yeah, you can make that argument.
Yeah.
Certain parts of it, anyways. Washington got some really good players. So do I. So do we. You know, my running back room is better than Washington's. Sorry. Bijan Robinson is a top three running back in the NFL.
That's a tough running back room to pick on up there right now.
I'm not picking on their running back room. I'm just saying mine is better. And it might be by nose hair, but it's better. Because I've got one of the best running backs in the league. They've got some good running backs. And you can, if you want to add Jaden Daniels, and that's fine.
Brian Robinson and Eckler, pretty good.
I'll take Bijan Robinson over both of them.
I think that's fair, but you just said the room.
Yeah, well, he is.
Algier and Bijan over Robinson and Eckler. I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I would.
It's more of a coin flip than I think you're giving it credit for. But
okay, well, we need to stop going in with this defeatist-ass attitude. Because as a fan base, we go into that, and I don't want to hear, well, they're pretty good too. No, we're better.
I think that I'm just...
we're better.
And that's the thing. That's why I brought up this entire conversation. I just feel like there's a little... I just have more... For whatever reason, right now, I feel like I'm leaning towards being more realistic than I am positive.
You know, it's not positive. We're better. We have... Bijan Robinson is better than any running back they put on the field.
Being positive is the opposite of having a defeatist attitude.
What? You're not being positive.
I know. You just said I'm having a defeatist attitude. I said positivity is the opposite of that.
Yeah, I know.
I don't...
But the reality is we could, we know this city and the fans in this city could go for a little bit of confidence every once in a while.
But my point is you can't blame them. Just go back to last year.
But stop. It's not last year. It's not the same coaching staff. It's not the same quarterback. There's players that are different. I understand the history. No one understands. You and I know this. I've been traveling with this team since 2012. I understand what happens. But what... Would it hurt us to have a little bit of positivity in some situations? Well, I'm not saying go buy playoff tickets. I'm saying, I have a little bit of confidence and not have this defeatist attitude. Same old Falcons. We don't know that. This is the first time we've went into a bye week with Raheem.
We do not know that. And this team has played incredibly well at times. And I think that possibility definitely still exists to be able to find a rhythm and be able to knock out going 4-2. Or better in the rest of the game. I don't blame anybody who feels downtrodden about it after what we've seen the last couple
of
weeks.
Okay, so if you're single at 25 or 26 years old, does every time you're in a relationship, you go, well, I mean, this is nice, but it'll end. Sure it'll end badly. I'm sure she'll probably cheat on me or something, or I'll screw it up. And
that's such a random pivot right there.
Well, really, do you just not approach girls anymore, or guys, because you're single at 26 and every relationship you've had has failed? Or do you keep going, you know what, I'm going to give it a try?
Number too, 26, just a little randomness. But I get what you're going.
Let me tell you why I said 26. Because if I said 40, you'd have been like, what, are you taking a shot at me? What does that mean? So I didn't want to go there. I just wanted to go. I didn't want to make it seem like I was taking a shot at anybody. That's all.
Hey, it's all right, Bo. I know you're cooking, man. I'm gonna let you cook.
Oh man, I don't think cooking's the word. I keep going back to we had all the same conversations a year ago, and I know it's a difference.
I wouldn't take it as a shot. I'm very happy.
I was
happy.
Just making sure you wouldn't. I didn't want you to think or anybody that's tweet me and be like, why are you taking shots at people that are 40 and single? And I was like, well, I'll just go 25. I don't know. I was trying to...
Very fulfilled. All right, continue. Continue, please.
Very fulfilled.
Continue.
Well, I didn't want anyone to perceive I was taking shots. That's all.
Anyways, to get the awkwardness out of the conversation really quick. Last year, we had the same conversation, too. And I sat here and I talked about who are the better quarterbacks that we're facing down the stretch. And the ones that we thought were the worst ones ended up being the ones that got us. And that's what's frustrating about it. And I just think that I'm with you, and I like what you're doing because I want to continue to have that attitude. But we're 48 hours removed from what we saw in Denver, and I'm just still struggling with it, man. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. And hopefully, given a bye week, maybe I can have a mental reset and hit the ground running after Thanksgiving, get a little belly full, and talk about some good Falcons football and some wins.
Well, and you know, we gotta like. We got to go in as fans, too. We need to show up at the Chargers game in 2 weeks or 11, 13 days, whatever it is.
Right.
Or 12 days and, you know, support. I mean, they're not an easy team to play. They got a really good defense. They're up and down offensively. They have halves where they're phenomenal and they have halves where they're not. But I just can't stand defeatist attitudes. Like, have some confidence in yourself. Have some confidence in your team. I know what the last 60 years or, you know.
2 weeks.
Is been like, and the last 2 weeks has looked a lot more like the last 60 years, give or take, than it's not. But, you know, I don't know. Like, have some positivity. Let's have some faith. Let's hope we can get it done. Let's just not say, well, we suck.
It's not going to stop me from cheering. I'll say that. And I'll leave it right there. It's not going to stop me from cheering.
I mean, sorry if I'm positive. Sorry, I want to believe. Not you, but to the greater people. I'm not sitting here saying, well, season's over. We suck. Panic button. Blow it up. Do this. I mean, I just don't live my life like that. I like to live in positivity and be happy. And when we are either eliminated from the playoffs or whatever it is, then I'll say that we're done. But until then,
start draft season.
Don't even start with that crap. I don't even want to hear.
You only got about, I don't know, 2 months.
No, to start talking. I don't want to hear a mock draft.
Like mock every day,
dude. I did a show into my hair. I was doing a show years and years ago, and we were like 2-4 or something. Like, well, let's start talking about the mock draft. I was like, have fun, brother, because I'm not.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start pecking. What you got for Life of Squid?
I got an update on my roommate.
Scrollgate?
My roommates. And the NBA tonight, I believe is what they call it. Is that the NBA on TNT show? It's NBA tonight, right? Inside the NBA.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's continuing. I'll tell you where next. Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And?
The Odyssey app.
Back here on the Morning Shift on the, what do you call this? Like the morning eve of the college football.
On the verge.
Playoff rankings.
On the verge of the rankings tonight.
That's what, yeah. They'll be dropped tonight.
Morning eve is good too.
Morning eve, I can say that.
I like
sure,
that.
We'll go with it.
I won't tell you not to.
All right. Well, we got Heather Dinich of ESPN, their college football insider. She put out her top 25 college football playoff predictions ahead of tonight's rankings being revealed. So I'll give you the top 12 here, which are 1, Oregon, 2, Ohio State, 3, Texas, 4, Penn State, 5, Indiana, Notre Dame at 6, 7, Miami, Alabama 8, Ole Miss 9, Georgia 10, Tennessee at 11, and Boise State at 12.
Yeah, I think there's just going to be a lot of eyeballs on how far Tennessee falls, how far Georgia jumps, and where does that leave Alabama and Ole Miss right there in the middle. Remember, just a refresher, last week you had 8-1, Tennessee at 7, with Georgia at 12, which would have left them out of the CFP, and you had Bama at 10, Ole Miss at 11 right in front of them. With Georgia winning against Tennessee, are they able to jump up in front of Alabama? I tend to think probably. I tend to think that's probably going to happen because, remember, Bama lost to Tennessee and Georgia beat them pretty good. And how far does Tennessee fall? Do they fall behind Alabama? And that's another question that will be answered later on tonight.
Well, head-to-head is not the only thing that matters. And I think that's what people are coming to the realization of, is because, yes, Tennessee will fall behind Alabama because Alabama looked impressive against LSU on the road. And they beat a... a 9-1 Mercer team.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
yeah.
So, and Tennessee just lost by 14 on the road. Yeah. And so, you know,
don't forget Ole Miss is at 11 right now, and you're probably going to get Georgia. I would have to think Georgia jumps ahead of them.
I don't think they
lost 2 weeks ago.
I don't think they do. I think Ole Miss will stay above them.
It's just so
I'm
hard,
okay with
man.
That.
It's so hard because all four of these teams have beaten one another. I think the only two teams that you can't say that about Alabama hasn't played Ole Miss.
But that's why you look at the recency, and I think Ole Miss just didn't Ole Miss have a bye week?
After the
Georgia game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, it's a very late bye, but I don't recall them playing anybody last week. So the last time I've seen them, they were beating Georgia by 18 points. So how can I drop them below Georgia? What has Georgia done?
Beat Tennessee.
Yeah, but 2 weeks? I mean, not even 2 weeks. 10 days ago, Ole Miss drubbed that team.
Yeah.
At home. So, I can't say that they jumped.
I honestly have no idea.
But I don't think it matters.
I don't think
it matters right now.
I was going to say, strictly as a Bama guy, I look at this and wonder how far Bama, if Georgia and Tennessee are in front of Alabama, and because I think the College Football Playoff Committee does this, where they go, hey, Bama might play in the SEC title game later. And I think that will be a big indicator of whether or not a 3-loss whoever loses SEC title game can stay in the playoffs.
Well, the only way that Georgia could miss the playoff to me.
Oh, Georgia's, yeah.
Is with if they went out their last two games, the only way that Georgia could lose out on the playoff is if they played Alabama in the SEC championship game and they lost again. That's the only way I could see them.
They would be out of it if they lost Georgia Tech.
I just said, assuming they win their last two games.
Okay.
Which means they would beat Georgia Tech.
Okay.
But, you know. But
is that okay?
That's the only way.
A little sassy.
That's the only way to me, because they would have lost to the same team twice, once at home. I mean, once on the road and once on a neutral field. And I think they would say, well, we don't want to see these two teams play a third time, potentially. Right. Even in a national title game, we think that's not what we would want to see. And that, because it is, and that's like something I agree with Mike and Carl on Deuce and Bell say all the time, this is still a TV product. Yeah, this is still a TV production in a lot of ways.
I am curious, the next curiosity for me was how far Georgia jumps in this ranking, and is there a possibility of them hosting in round one? That's the next question I think that'll be out there. Because you've got all these teams in this mismatch, and you know that there's going to be Big Ten teams that eventually fall. Indiana's at 5. They'll have to play. They're kind of in the same situation where they'll have to play a conference championship game.
I think there's a way, and I don't know exactly how it plays out, but I think there's a way that Indiana could lose this weekend to Ohio State and still play in the Big Ten championship game against Oregon. Which means Ohio State would be sitting at home, and they could also be one of the final top four, but they would be not knocked down to 5 or 6 or 7 and get a bye, right?
Yeah.
Or a home playoff game, I mean. Not a bye, but a home playoff game.
Yeah.
And so that could happen.
If you're a Georgia fan, you go into, Bloomington? You going to make that trip? If that was the matchup?
I think some Georgia fans would. I think Georgia fans would be like, dude, how often am I going to get to go to Bloomington? Like,
Else would I ever go to Bloomington?
Yeah, let's go see a game.
I'm with you.
It might be more appealing, Tiff, if they said, we're going to go to the Horseshoe and play Ohio State.
I know plenty of Bama fans that would make that trip for sure. So it'd be interesting to see how that all plans out.
The question is, does Indiana get in if they lose to Ohio State, still make somehow the world revolves where they somehow still make the conference championship game and then lose that?
Yeah.
Do they used to get in the playoff altogether? Because, I mean, hell, they're a two-loss team. They lost to the two best teams they played. Do they deserve to be in the playoff? Do they? Their schedule is garbage it is. Do they deserve to be in the playoff? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, don't worry about it, Georgia fans. If you're below Ole Miss, it doesn't matter because Florida's going to beat them this weekend. That's right. Don't forget the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic is November 25th, which is
6 days.
Yeah. Do we know how many hours? 6 days and 6 days, 1 hour and 10 and a half minutes.
144 hours.
Because it's a 10 a.m. shotgun. Go over to the 929 Game website, events page, and find out ways to be a part of the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic. Appreciate all the sponsors that have joined us, and it is for pets for vets. So, I told you guys that I had a new roommate, maybe multiple, and I thought that it was time to evict them. They will not be squatters in Casa de Squidbilly.
Yeah. Casa
what?
The Squidbilly villa.
Yeah, so yeah. I had Mr. Horner come out, and he proofed it where they can't get in.
Roden proofed your home.
So, last night, I'm sitting downstairs in my little office, and Amy goes, hey, she says, hey, come here. You can hear the squirrel. The squirrel's trying to get in. And it kind of hurt my heart a little
bit. Made you sad a little bit?
Made me a little sad.
Was it cold?
Because I went up there, and I could hear.
Oh.
In the corner of the house, you could hear.
Yeah.
And then it would be
like nuts there.
There's got to be plenty of nuts around. He wants warmth.
Yeah, there's plenty of nuts in the yard. So then I go, oh, I feel kind of bad. Like, you know, he's trying to get home. And then Amy goes,
up the front door.
And he goes, well, he's got a tree he can live in. And so then she goes, well, what if the babies are in there? And I said, well, first off, we didn't find any. And second, kind of parent leaves her kid on
I do go get food.
Animals do it
for 28 hours? I mean, holy crap, we had it squirrel proofed at like 10 a.m. Sunday morning, and this mother gonna show up Monday night at like 9 o'clock.
Bad squirrel parent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Tell you, I'm gonna call defects on that squirrel because they ain't tending to their children properly. But I remember my dad rescues squirrels sometimes, so maybe I'll go out there and find them and take them to my dad. But anyways, so and then Amy goes, what if they left something in there? Or she goes, what if they're cold? And I said, well, they got a tree they can live in. And she was like, you're a jerk. I was like, well, that's what you said to me.
It'll be fine.
You could hear the squirrel trying to get in. So I guess it worked.
Poor squirrel. All right. We're gonna find out what's coming up on the steakhouse house. Next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.